If you want to get the things done that matter to your organization, those three things need to happen. And those three things are almost strictly related to people as opposed to whatever it is you're actually trying to do. So if you can get above what it is you're actually trying to do and recognize that it's, again, communication, connection, and collaboration.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. When it comes to managing growth through inflection points, ERP implementations are pivotal. Despite the premise of superior ERP systems helping with our growth, going through the purchase and implementation process isn't fun. With the added challenges of COVID-19 and remote collaboration, we face an added risk of going over budget and as a result, taking a hit on our growth ambitions. In today's episode, we have our guest, Aaron Koss, CPA from Site Consulting Group, who brings a unique and fresh perspective through her recent ebook on how to grow and scale during COVID-19. In this episode, she takes us through the journey of an ERP implementation that they planned before COVID but continued despite the unforeseen challenges and made a massive success for the client in the end. If you would like to learn more about how to manage ERP implementation without that being a roadblock for your growth, this episode is a must-listen for you. Aaron Koss, CPA, is the CEO of Site Consulting Group Incorporation. She is known for helping family-owned manufacturing companies scale with vision and integrity. Taking a people-first process and technology readiness approach, Aaron and the team at Site ensure companies are ready to take on big change initiatives like ERP and technology upgrades before diving in headfirst. A native to the Pacific Northwest, she enjoys traveling, being outdoors, hiking, biking, rowing, and supporting the local culinary scene. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, hey, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. It's really great to be with you today.
So today, I think we are going to be talking about the story that you would like to share and the ebook that you have written. And my understanding is that the topic of the ebook is how to grow and scale during COVID-19. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, as you're aware, our company helps companies, mid-sized manufacturing companies, grow and scale using enterprise solutions and technology as a catalyst, essentially. And so for us, as we were in, as COVID hit, one of the interesting things that happened was we were right in the middle of a, you know, what for us is a typical 9-month to 36-month ERP implementation with a mid-sized manufacturing company. And we were just going into the second phase, what we call the design phase, where we're focused on transaction testing, sometimes also called unit testing, of, in this case, it happened to be an Epicor E10 implementation for the client. And we were headed in there, and all of a sudden, this was in March of this year, and COVID hits, and we were scheduled to be traveling to the client site for 3 of the 5 weeks in March. We got a week into March, we traveled that first week, and we were all grounded immediately. And so the question became, all right, you know, in a world where project execution in the ERP, you know, in these types of projects, historically, it's been really important to clients, particularly that we're on site, we're in a war room, if you will, that's the term we use for that conference room where we're just spending hours and hours together. Really testing and pressure testing a new solution for a company. And, you know, they have always preferred that we spend a lot of face time with them doing that. It certainly has always been very efficient to do that. There's so many things to, you know, it's like herding cats, as you can imagine. You're competing with the client's day job. You're trying to stay focused on the project and moving toward important milestones, et cetera, all with this idea that they can only grow and scale as fast as you can get these tools in to support them. And it's costing them money the longer everybody's putzing around with getting it implemented. So, you know, there's a need for speed. So some of that has always led to, I think, a perception that we all have to be on site together as much as possible during some of these critical times in a project. And so, you know, the project is, I would say, a third of the way in and COVID hits and we can't be face-to-face anymore. And so we had to make a pivot. And so the interesting thing, I think, for us as a consulting firm, you know, we've been doing what we do for almost 30 years. So for us, the idea of remote work is not as foreign, right? Doing Zoom is pretty common. Our clients are all over the country. So we do a fair amount that way as a, you know, as a technology forward company. So that wasn't foreign to us. So we've always been very open to the idea of remote work. But, you know, for clients in the work that the, you know, particularly manufacturing companies, that's not typically the way they've operated. So come March, we had to do a profound pivot and start to figure out how to help this client not only get acclimated to Zoom as a tool, which they did very quickly for in their case, but also how to establish and how to keep our project cadence, but also remain connected in some new and different ways that we just didn't have to do before, right? You're not looking at people face to face. You're not, you know, right next to them in an office. You can't just go grab them when you have a quick question. So we had to get very intentional about how we scheduled our time, how we pulled people in and when, and how we oriented the project to serve the client and keep up the cadence that we had. And in the end, the most amazing thing was, you know, and this is so much to the client's credit as well as to my team, is, you know, we haven't missed a beat. It's just been so amazing. And I think even in spite of some COVID, not only created challenges in this way from a remote work perspective, but also practically speaking, for many of our manufacturing clients' businesses, the supply chain has been interrupted and impacted. So not only are they working on a project that is transformational for them, but there's some very real challenges in the business that it had come up as a result of COVID that then exacerbated the pressure on their resources to be able to show up and play at all. And, you know, to their credit for sure, they have maintained a cadence with us as we had designed from the beginning and haven't missed a beat. Yeah. So it's just been remarkable, remarkable to see.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the way you mentioned this, that we are so familiar with these digital tools and technologies, but still, it could be quite a change for everyone, especially during this pandemic. So it's a remarkable story for sure. So before we get there, I would like to understand a little bit about the client. What was this company and what was their challenge with respect to the ERP? Can you take us back in time and talk about the client and the situation? And what was your role with respect to the ERP selection?
Absolutely. So these guys are a second generation family owned manufacturing company. They're over $100 million in sales, and they make seamless gutters for the residential construction industry. So they have multiple manufacturing plants, two in the U.S., one in Canada, and then they also have over 20 distribution centers. Basically, they do their own distribution. They own their distribution centers, and that is the way they support in the United States their own customers. It's a business-to-business model, and they support their customers by running what they call these over 20 branches around the country where they're shipping their product to, you know, on a daily basis. So they have manufacturing in three locations and then over 20 branches around the country. It's kind of a classic scenario where, you know, they came to us with their legacy system. For them was a Sage, what they call ERP 300, I think these days. In the old days, it was called ACPAC. That's still what the client calls it, of course. But so they were pushing the limits of what ACPAC could do for them, both in terms of the number of licenses that they could have, as well as just the capabilities and features that it had to support a combination manufacturing distribution model that was, you know, decentralized in some areas and centralized in others. Things like point of sale, you know, and the heavy lifting in manufacturing in terms of MRP and scheduling, et cetera. So, you know, ACFACT, they had just outpaced the current solution, which is real common. And so they had reached out to us. We had met them a few years ago at a conference that we were both at and got to talking about their challenges. And as we find so often with companies of this size, they are so brilliant at what they do. They're so successful. I mean, in fact, these guys have continued to grow very rapidly in 2020, despite COVID, just because of the industry they're in. Certainly, they're essential relative to the industry that they're in. And, you know, the challenge they run into at this kind of the size they are the employees are so great at what they do at running the business, but they also run relatively lean. They aren't sitting around with a bunch of extra people that they can just pull on to staff a core team, as we call it, a team that is required to implement and across, you know, implement these solutions. We'll put together a core team of individuals who are kind of the best and the brightest within an organization and create a cross-functional team to really help be the brains of inside their own organization to help get them from where they are today to where it is they're trying to go relative to a new solution. And the challenge they have, though, is they know their business so well, but they are so, these are also the folks that are terribly, terribly busy with their day jobs. So there's two challenges they tend to face. And the reason they tend to ask us for help and our support, they just don't have the capabilities in the ERP space or the capacity within their own organization to support a project like this completely and totally. So for example, you know, one of the things that we see is while they may be absolute experts in production and purchasing and or order entry, things like this, order to cash, procure to pay, some of these key and core business processes within their own organization, translating that to how do I get from ACPAC to a bigger ERP solution? In this case, they went to Epicor, which is a what we would call a tier two solution. You know, they it's not something they do very often. You know, sometimes companies do this once every, you know, 10, mostly closer to 20 years sometimes. So the people in the building, that's not their core competency, right? So the risk they run is it takes longer, it costs more. They've run, they step into potholes that they wouldn't have known to skirt around, if you will. And so they bring us in to really help with the guidance, particularly in the areas of project management. You know, that's again the idea of how do I get from where I am today to where I need to go, bringing together the people, processes, and technology to do so in a way that makes sense for the business, that's going to be efficient, and is also going to avoid some of the traditional risks and potholes. Again, that's just not their sweet spot. It's not where they know to go. So what we do is we will oftentimes particularly play a very strong project management role because we're able to help sort of guide that road, help them craft that roadmap and guide that roadmap throughout, bringing together all of those pieces in a way that they can be successful. The other place where we see them, companies like this typically needing support is oftentimes in the business and technical analyst space. So we don't love to fill out a core team with a lot of outside resources because those business processes of the company are so much better. I mean, certainly we all understand order to cash in my industry, in my world, but you know, the way a particular client needs to approach that to be successful for their customers is unique and special. And we need to be able to honor that. So we bring a combination of, you know, a broad business background to the table to help support their team getting where they're trying to go. So while we will provide business analysts or technical analysts to support some of the additional capacity needs they might have, we try really hard not to replace the people on the team so that between them and us and the software provider themselves, we create what we call three legs of a stool, which really creates the potential for great success. So for them, you know, it allows them to run at a pace that made this project doable within the business, but provided them the capabilities and capacity they needed to really be successful in the end.
Amazing. And with respect to your role, I can see that they were on Sage and you guys went on Epicor. So were you involved with the selection process as well, or did they select on by themselves and then you complemented their team?
Yes, that's a great question. You know, we were just talking about that today in our organization a little bit, because one of the things that's so fascinating about these family-owned manufacturing companies is they are so capable. They're so industrious. I mean, they're successful for a reason. They are used to doing things for themselves internally and doing them very, very well. And ERP is one of those things that they will often, in fact, I would say probably we would say 75% of the time, will go at the selection process themselves. And it has a variety of results. Rarely is it, for a company of this size, particularly a mid-sized company, is it a successful, fully successful endeavor, truthfully, without outside assistance. And that's not a dig on the company themselves. Again, it comes back to this just isn't where they spend all their time. You know, ERP products have a life cycle like any product in the marketplace. And if you're not playing in that world every day, it's there's a lot of things you don't know and you can miss. And so we actually find a fair number of our clients come to us following in some point in the selection process, but oftentimes it's near the end and we have to sometimes backpedal and adjust. So we find it kind of interesting that so many of these guys will go at the selection themselves, and it's kind of a risky endeavor. That said, for these guys, to their credit, it took them about 2 years to select Epicor. And so I would argue for them, the challenge was not that they didn't choose they actually did the selection themselves and then brought us in to assist with the implementation. But I think they had intended to do it themselves until they realized that they were in over their heads in terms of capabilities and capacities, because again, they started to get some insights into, we don't know what we don't know here. We need some more support. And they realized that through talking with other people at ERP conferences provided by the software provider themselves, actually. But what was interesting is in their case, you know, I think that the selection would have taken them, 6 months, or, we find that selections average 4 months to 9 months for the clients that we work with. And, it took them 2 years. So you got to look at the opportunity cost there at some level by doing it themselves. And so certainly we find a quicker, typically less risk-free outcome if people hire experts to support the selection process. But in these guys' case, they brought us in for the implementation initially. So that's how we started with them.
Interesting. That's a tough spot to be, I guess, especially since you have to get involved with so many different ERP systems and you don't know which one you're going to be working with next. Sometimes it could be really tough position to be in, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we actually really love that spot. You know, so we like to think of ourselves as ERP agnostic, but we've been in this business long enough. And because we focus on manufacturing companies, you know, we're not looking at, the 150 or more in some level solutions that claim to be ERP solutions in the marketplace. You know, we see in the last 5 years, we see really the same pile of solutions over and over. So we hedge our bets typically and stay pretty well acclimated to all of those solutions for this, size of company in this industry, et cetera, and we maintain those relationships as well. But, we really don't pretend to be the solution provider. So we really really do see it as three legs of a stool where, I'll use Epicor as an example since we're talking about this particular installation. But, where the mode of operations for the solution provider is to bring the experts in the solution that really even sometimes VARs can struggle with. But the VARs typically, or the solution manufacturer, whether they go direct or through a VAR, they're the absolute expert in the software. And that's a place where we can't be an expert in the company, the client's business to the degree they are. Like, sure, we know order to cash, procure to pay, but we can't be the expert to the degree they are. It's just not possible. We're not in it every day. And, the same is true of the solution provider. They're in it every single day and they have expertise that, as much as we understand and get ERP and have worked with, most of the solutions for manufacturers at this point, they're going to add a level of value there that we just can't provide the same way. So I think where we kind of bridge the gaps with both are having, because of our broad business background, as well as our expertise in manufacturing and on the the more technical IT architecture side, software development side, some of these places that sort of bring all of these pieces together is, I think, the place that we really add value because, the VARs, for all of their expertise, and the solution provider, for all of their expertise in the software, because of their own business model, can get very myopic in that area. They're so focused on the software and getting it implemented and focusing on that piece that there's things outside the business strategically just that they wouldn't necessarily be privy to or know, because they're not boots on the ground with the client in the same way that we are. So we find just this really beautiful synergy between the three parties that, you know, I think is just really serves the client well in the end. You know, the one thing I want to add actually to that comes to mind too is one of the things that's really special about what I call that three legs of a stool or the trifecta is we have an opportunity recognizing going in that the client that when we get there knows ACPAC but doesn't know Epicor and maybe doesn't know how to get their order to cash process from here to there, let's say, and they don't have internal project management skills. They don't have, you know, the business analysts with the broad business background to help kind of navigate getting from the start to the finish. One of the things that we really pride ourselves on is collaborating and working with them as well as the solution provider to help together at the end of that project, make sure that they've got some of the critical skills that they need to really optimize and continue to support and maintain these solutions going forward with as little outside support as they can, as required. So, you know, as if you've done ERP for any length of time, you realize that it's really a leveling up exercise for the organization. When we talk about scaling and growing, we recognize that's a people exercise as well. So there's people in the organization that, you know, we've had situations where, and this situation is no different, you know, somebody who comes onto the team as a purchase order entry person or an order entry person, you know, when they have to level up in an ERP sense, they're also leveling up their own business acumen, their own technical acumen. And they're, you know, if we do our job correctly and work with the solution provider in the most effective way, the end result for the client is one where, you know, they level up the people in the building. So they're not just transaction workers that they may, some of them come in as, but they're truly powerful knowledge workers in a lot broader sense. They collaborate better, they communicate better cross-functionally, they maybe know how to manage a project a little more than they did before. They're more technical than they were before. Just things like that that come about, we're very intentional about trying to bring those skills that we do bring to the table initially and try and augment their own team with some of those so that as they move forward, they need to rely on us less and rely on the solution provider less and then only pull either of us in for those kind of transformational change initiatives that really they just need extra capabilities and capacity to do. But you know, these are companies that really pride themselves on being self-powered, if you will. And so they really do want us to be temporary and only in the room for some of those key change initiatives, right? So we try and really honor that. So it's kind of funny. We talk about how we work ourselves out of a job and we're not joking. And yet it's really what serves these companies the best. And, you know, what our hope is that they say, hey, you did a great job, and they refer us to their colleagues.
Yeah, amazing. And I want to go back to our COVID situation a bit, because you talk a lot about the project management. And this is one of the interesting projects that I have seen recently. I think, you know, you had to change the project plan or the business plan at least 3 times, I guess, you know, related to the project, because one time they actually brought you in. So I think there must be some sort of cost adjustment with the project plan there. And then the COVID hit. So there must be some cost assumptions that need to be changed there as well. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, this was really, when COVID first hit, it was a bit of a panic for sure for them and for us, because we assumed, gosh, it's going to stretch the project out longer. It's going to cost them more money. You know, we didn't want that any more than they did. It's just not good for anybody. It's poor for momentum. It leads to lower success rates. It can be fraught with just all sorts of challenges. But actually, something really exciting happened, you know, because we were able to pivot to a remote model. And I'm happy to chat with you about some of the critical success factors there if it serves. But one of the things that was really beautiful was in going remote out of necessity, you know, it was the first time we were able to, because we had to prove to a client, hey, you can do this remotely. Like, we've kind of always known we could, because we do in other contexts, but clients were never convinced. And so they said, hey, you got to be on site. We actually have ended up saving clients, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 a week in travel costs. That's a week in the course of this project. So we've actually saved the money relative to the big picture. And for us, I just feel like that's such a win for them and for us even. I just think it's just such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, any savings for the client, I think that's going to be amazing. So good work there. Yeah. Now, with respect to the remote work, did you see any differences in the working environment? Do you have any learnings that you would like to share if anybody is doing these remote projects, the ERP projects?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I won't lie. We had to try some things. We had to be really aware, I think, about what was working and pivot quickly if we saw that something wasn't serving any longer, which is, you know, the nature of a project anyway, I think, when you're on the ground. But we had to be, I think, just as aware, so hyper aware what was going on in the dynamic. I do think that it was helpful for sure that we had as much FaceTime with the client and getting to know them as individuals and as a company in January and February, which we started the project in January. And so it's an interesting thing to think about going forward, that if you don't have that initial face-to-face, like how do you make up for that piece? And I think that's still doable, but it's definitely something we would think about. But we had a fair amount of FaceTime going in. And so what we had to do was then once we went remotely, I think the thing that was interesting was we went from a situation where we could be more fluid with it. So you know, you'd travel on site to the client for, say, 3 or 4 days worth of work during the week, and you'd be focused on a particular topic, call it transaction testing, right? You're testing the new system with the client's business processes to see what works and what doesn't, and making adjustments accordingly. And you'd be in a room together and you would be doing this, being able to have a lot of fluidity. And what we learned with being online was that this wasn't always possible. So we started out by creating sort of day-long meeting rooms, if you will, for the whole team to exist in. And this worked a little bit for a while and kind of got us all acclimated on Zoom and got us all face-to-face. But just the nature of the technology made it difficult to kind of everybody be in a room all at once without the specific intention or a plan. So, you know, where we could have a little more fluidity on the ground face to face, we found over time that it was really important to schedule clear sort of small breakout meetings during the week. So a couple of things, I'll back up a little bit. One of the things we learned in order to be effective was, you know, like I said, the big group scenario didn't always serve. So we started to limit those. And the way we did that, but we didn't want to eliminate them, because what we found was being together all together in one group is really how we fostered connection, collaboration, and could get broad communications delivered. You could also get a nice pulse. You know, when you're looking at a Zoom screen with 18 people on it, believe it or not, you can get a really nice test or gauge of, like, how is everybody doing? Do we still have momentum? Are people, why am I getting deer in the headlights here? Why am I getting, you know, why is everybody quiet today? Like, what's going on that's bigger than this project in people's lives, in the company? I mean, it could be one person having a challenge because, you know, grandma's at home living with them now and has COVID. Or all of my kids are at home right now and I haven't, you know, they're not in school and I'm trying to balance all this. So you needed that group dynamic, so you couldn't eliminate it. And so the way we typically will carve out a project when a company has, when the resources on a project have to flip between their day job and their project work, we will oftentimes very clearly sort of negotiate with the client, like, what are the days you want these guys allocated to this project? When do we have them so that we can keep the distractions to a minimum and they can focus on one or the other? Because when they try and do both in the same room, they don't do either well, right? Multitasking is a big joke in some ways. And so we agreed with these guys that the project was Tuesday to Thursday from 9 to 4 p.m. during the week. And so on Tuesday mornings, we schedule a 30-minute kind of all hands on deck, look like a stand-up meeting if you were doing it on site. And we all get in the room and we kick off the week. And that meeting is focused on getting everybody in the room, getting everybody face to face. I call it getting eyeballs. It's my big phrase is I need eyeballs for a minute. And it's because that's where you find your point of connection is through looking at one another directly. And so we will kick off the week with what's the schedule, who's going to be where, what support do you need, How can we help you get to where you need to go and get the things done you need to this week? So it's just really kind of a tactical, how are we going to get, what's going on for the week? How are we going to do it? How can we support you? That's usually a relatively quick meeting. And then what we learned was during the week that we started to really schedule with, we had business analysts who were on the, I would say, quote, on the ground, but working day to day, kind of hand in hand with some of the key resources on the core team who were particularly, I would say, really particularly busy. Like, so they just couldn't get it all done. So they really needed someone to kind of help them move through the project most effectively. So we provided a technical analyst and a business analyst to really side by side with multiple members of the team to really help keep that moving forward. And so what we've done is taken those analysts and leveraged them to create small group meetings throughout the week to continue to move whatever initiative is happening that week forward. So for example, we're now in integration testing, where what we call end-to-end business process testing. And so it's a cross-functional exercise. So we will, the week before, really look at what's coming that following week. And we'll get all these meetings on the books for subsets of people on the broader team. And those will be led by analysts from our team to ensure that we're moving that needle forward consistently. I think that's actually, now that I'm thinking about it a little more, another change since COVID, where, you know, our role, our analysts are involved in a slightly different way, right? They're running subsets of these teams as opposed to maybe the group as a whole all the time. So we'll have these subsets of meetings, move the needle forward during the week. Everybody's very heads down. Anybody on the teams is allowed to pop into any of the existing meetings. If they think, oh gosh, I should have been invited to that meeting and I wasn't, they can pop in. But we're really focused on heads down, moving the needle forward. On Thursdays, then we have a closing wrap meeting, which can be an hour to an hour and a half. And that one is really focused on what came up during the week and what we call our top 10 critical issues. So what are the issues that are going to keep us from meeting our milestones on time and on budget? And so these are the big process issues typically that come to the forefront and are the things that we end up focusing on quite heavily. But it really, again, gives the team a chance to eyeball. You're done with the week. You can do a pressure test on, you know, what went well, what are your challenges, you know, sort of what's your big win and maybe what's your big challenge this week. And sometimes we'll do a round robin even to just get a pulse of that and get people sharing a little more broadly. But the key thing about the meeting that opens the week and the meeting that closes the week is really that opportunity for connection, collaboration, and communication that you just have to be successful when you're doing all this remote work together in smaller teams during the week. And we have found that we really hit our stride in taking that type of approach for a project.
Okay, this story is so interesting that I want to keep going, but unfortunately, we have to stop now because we have run out of time. So do you have any last-minute thoughts by any chance, Erin, before we close?
Yeah, you know, I think as companies are considering doing, you know, transformational change projects in the midst of this remote work, like when we talk about what's the future of this work, you know, I think what I hear consistently, the biggest challenge companies are having is how do we collaborate, communicate, and connect? And I think being aware that is the most important thing, meaning that is important because if you want to get the things done that matter to your organization, those three things need to happen. And those three things are almost strictly related to people as opposed to whatever it is you're actually trying to do. So if you can get above what it is you're actually trying to do and recognize that it's, again, communication, connection, and collaboration, and that's an exercise in people, staying aware of those people, the people on the team, how do you figure out how they're doing? What do they need? How do you meet those needs? How do you support them? And just asking good questions, being aware, asking good questions, and then being prepared to pivot and adjust as people's needs change. What we saw with COVID this year is, you know, every week was a different experience. Every week was a different, something new we had to deal with. So we have more experience now, but I think the questions are still the same. How do we stay connected in collaboration and communicating? It's an exercise in people. It's not about software.
Thank you so much, Erin, for your time and insight as well.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up stuff from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to know further about Aaron or Site Consulting Group, please visit sitecg.com. That is site, S-Y-T-E, C as in Charlie, G as in group.com. She is offering a complimentary copy of the ebook to our listeners. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Chase Clymer from Electric Eye, who brings a unique perspective on D2C from the angle of e-commerce, toolset, and Shopify. Also, the interview with Jason Chester from Infinity QS, who touches on D2C from a real-time manufacturing quality intelligence standpoint. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.